Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, January 1st, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, January 1st, everybody. It's pretty weird. My days and years are all messed up now. It is 31 degrees and lightly snowing with lake effect snow here in upstate New York. So it looks like we're kicking off the new year with a wintry one. I don't know. This whole weekend's supposed to be jingle bells, so we'll see. So where do we leave off yesterday? Yeah, we actually did a live show yesterday. We titled the show 1 Million Year DNA Storage. Webs of life and carbon nanotubes. If you remember, we ended the show looking at that poor spider. I don't remember what the kind of spiders were, but those poor spiders that they had squirted with water, loaded with carbon nanotubes, and whoop! Apparently, somehow, the spider absorbed it into his body, and it was spitting out carbon nanotubes in its spider webs to make one of the strongest substances ever seen on Earth. I am pretty sure that's what they were alluding to. Like, you couldn't do anything to this stuff. It's pretty scary. And as we pollute our environment more and more with this mad science gone mad, and we looked at a lot of that yesterday, really kind of started with the basics, the fungus on the floor of the forest and plants talking. And Mother Earth, I mean, we started at the basics yesterday. And as we pollute more and more with this mad science nanotech, we talked about some of the mosquito viruses and some of this crazy stuff that's going on with the Oxitec mosquitoes. They, of course, released some of the GMO Oxitec mosquitoes using that CRISPR-Cas9 technology to create them. And said that it was going to prevent dengue fever from getting a foothold. And they'd already released them in a few countries. And then they released them in Brazil. And not 6 months later, we have 2,700 cases of some new infection that just appeared for the first time right around the same time those GMO mosquitoes appeared in Brazil. But it's now killed or maimed, brain damaged 2,700 infants born to mothers bitten by these mosquitoes. Honestly, it is not an accident. And we're going to be seeing more and more of this. The genies are out of the bottle. First time in the United States, we talked many times about this. They wanted to release the genetically modified mosquitoes, but everyone got upset down in Key West. So what did they do? Cuomo approved the genetically modified moths in New York that they let go without environmental impact study. And after they did it, and again, they were Oxitec, by the way. They were Oxitec moths. And then what happened was they went, oh, whoops, we didn't do an environmental impact study. And as a matter of fact, we let them go right near an organic farm. Oh, sorry about that. You know, and the insects are just one thing. You know, when we start looking at nanotechnology, and I'm telling you, I have run across so much now with some of this new stuff they're doing with self-replicating nanotech and some of the success that they're having. You cannot put that genie back in the bottle. Those little walking nano walkers just don't want to go back. I'm going to tell you, you know what I did last night? I stayed here all by myself. And I watched the ball drop. And I got to say, for as much as everyone can't stand Anderson Cooper with that Kathy, I don't remember what her name is, but the comedian that he does the ball drop with every year. And I'm talking, I mean, I go back 20 plus years watching that crap. But that Kathy, I can't remember her name, the comedian, she is funnier than hell. And, you know, I mean, you could tell the two of them are definitely friends and they've been friends for a lot of years. But she goes out of her way to, like, embarrass the hell out of him by just saying stuff that nobody else on the planet would get away saying to Anderson Cooper. So it was pretty funny. I sat here and chuckled a little bit and hit the mute a bunch of times. But when it was over, I decided to do something that I don't ever do, and that's scroll through the channels and I found RoboCop just starting. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. So anyway, I watched RoboCop last night, and I got to tell you, talk about like precognition as for the way things are coming. And I mean, that guy, when he got blown up and they put him in the, you know, they were going to save him, so they put him in the RoboCop outfit. It's everything we've been saying. Like, they pray in the desperate and the dying, right? And they're telling the lady, well, we don't have much time. If you're going to do this, you'd be a perfect example, but we got to do it now. Pressure, pressure. And all he was some lungs and a trachea and a brain with lots of little implants in it that they were putting in. And I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're pretty close to being there. We can 3D print all kinds of organs and transplant them into all kinds of creatures. And we got all kinds of prosthetic devices integrating into bodies that are mind controlled and don't need any type of old fashioned apparatcha, right? DARPA's got that all lock, stock, and barrel, and they're working with all the big universities. And of course, our fallen vets are probably some of the first victims. You know, law enforcement, I could absolutely see who could be next, but this is all about military. That's what the DARPA's about. The DARPA. That's what we should start calling it. The DARPA. But once this cat gets out of the bag, I mean, I was watching the streets and they had some of those Mech Warrior. And I mean, what a great game that was back in the day. But I most certainly don't want to see Mech Warriors marching down my street. And what was so great, too, is they kept saying it's all for your safety. It's exactly what it's for. It's for your safety. Wink. They had Atlas robots in there. If you haven't seen the movie in a long time, I think you better. They even were having arguments and they didn't have an international coalition like we do, but they were having arguments between the one guy who apparently was in charge here for the United States and then the multi-international corporation that wanted to start selling them here in the United States. And they were fighting for the fact that it wasn't ethical to have machines killing humans without emotion. That if they killed a baby accidentally, like we have cops doing now, like throwing flash grenades into a crib when it was the wrong household. Actually, I think they were executing a warrant with that one. But regardless, you don't throw a flash grenade into a crib. They're like, oh, we didn't know the kid was there. But you know what? That's going to scar you for life. And so their argument was, you have these robotic law enforcers who feel nothing, who have absolutely no remorse or regret or empathy. You couldn't have them killing humans. And to this very day, we're having that same argument, except it's on a very large international scale. They were showing, of course, how it was being used in the Middle East. They're like, look, it's keeping all these Middle Eastern families safe as we have mech warriors patrolling the streets. And we should have those in the USA. It's getting pretty close there. It's where they're trying out all this new robotics technology. But the sad fact of the matter is, I think in this latest, it's like November, maybe September, October. I think it was November. I don't know. Time goes by so fast. But they just had another. We covered it a couple weeks back. They just had another international conference on whether or not we are to ban all unmanned killer robots. And I know it sounds like a joke, but it's not. I mean, a killer robot could be anything from an unmanned aerial vehicle with, I don't know, what would you put on them? A manned aerial vehicle with missiles on it. I mean, they could have that. Raptors, you know, lock on target. And they could be doing identification with 230-point facial recognition. Beep, 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 beep. There's the insurgent. You know, I just saw, too, they're paying. And there's been issues for a long time about PTSD that the drone pilots have been crying about. And I always kind of pointed and said, what a bunch of wuss bags sitting in a room with your freaking Game Boy joystick that you've been using for 20 years sitting there as a little piss pot in front of the TV playing video games instead of helping your mom clean the dog shit up in the backyard. And now you're making, like, money hand over fist sitting in a room killing faceless people who are unidentifiable because you don't know. Do you really care? Do you even know if it's real? Is it a game or is this reality? But then they're crying once they finally realize that these are women and children and who the hell knows what that they're killing all these thousands of miles away from sitting in a room playing a video game, that then they were suffering from PTSD. And now there are so many of them who've woken up, and that's a good thing. It's a very good thing they're waking up. But there's so many of them that have woken up now, none of them want to do this job anymore. And they're offering him a $125,000 bonus to stay on as a drone pilot. And that might seem like a lot, but I'm telling you, I think the reason why it's not such a big deal is because eventually, very soon, they are going to have these autonomous units. And they already have them, but the issue is killing. Killing and identifying and killing without human intervention. So, I don't know. That was a ramble and a half. So I don't know where else I want to leave it. I don't think I'm going to talk too much about that. Maybe. Let's weave this story. So, talking about the military and unmanned killing machines and robots. You know, we talked a lot about Google, DARPA, NASA. That was 2 days ago. We did the Google, DARPA, NASA connection. Kind of tied in some of Verizon and Amazon all as part of this air traffic control plan that's going into place for the drones across the United States. Google with their Google Loon. We're going to dig into that. Zori actually is digging into some of the frequency stuff as well. She dropped me a bunch of links that I got to watch some videos. And I found some, which I had a mass crash last night, but I'm sure I could, I put it in the notes of the show yesterday. That doctor she was talking about that was doing all the research with frequencies and mind control. Hold on. I was trying to connect to my other computer, and it looks like a call just tried to ring in here, but it didn't because it's not forwarded. All right, anyway, so here's something interesting that I found. So all this collusion between military and corporate world and death machines. I mean, it always sounds like a good combination to me. Well, we have good old Big Dog. Yeehaw! It says, yeehaw! Remember Big Dog? It was the pack animal robot that looked like a big trotting barrel on some horse legs. It was pretty loud and obnoxious, but they had three sizes. They had Big Dog, and then they had like the cheetah. And I think the cheetah's legs were a little bit different. And then they had the little one as well. But these things walked around. Like, if you saw Google's headquarters, and there was a video in one of these very early acquisitions where Google had started buying, this is probably 2, maybe 3 years ago now, where they started buying all these military robotics companies. And I mean, really, when after watching again RoboCop yesterday, I thought that was a great movie to kick off the new year with. I started thinking about Google. I was like, man, Google really is the company now, aren't they? Just the way that they are acquiring all this stuff and integrating themselves so beautifully into the framework of the federal and commercial governments. Commercial governments. There we go. The new term. The federal governments and the commercial entities. But anyway, here's some good news for 2016. This came out 2 days ago. DARPA's noisy robotic pack mule, and that is Big Dog, mothballed over fears it could spill the beans because it's loud. Now, you'd think they'd find a way with a little bit of WD-40, put it on some of those creaky joints to quiet it down. And I am sure that, you know, this Big Dog cost millions, if not billions of dollars in development. They've been testing it for the longest time. I can't imagine that they would scrap something that has been that promising for such a long time. But you know how it is. It's like saying that HAARP is offline and no longer being used, and we find out that DARPA was the last one in there doing experiments. Wink. Right. It's offline. We believe you. Sorry, guys. I'm still hacking up half along here. Pops called yesterday, by the way. He finally was able to get out of bed, and my mother went out without him. So he decided, half dead, he was going to call me and do a little bit of holiday cheer. I felt bad for him because he'd been in bed since they left here. It was Christmas. Well, let's see. They left Saturday. So 6 days he's been in bed sick. All right, anyway, let's read this DARPA story. The U.S. Marine Corps has halted its use of the mule-like robot designed to carry 400 or more pounds and follow human commands. The robot, born of a partnership between Google and the Pentagon's research arm, ding, 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 that partnership between Google and DARPA is way, 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 way deeper than we know. I don't know. I almost think that this was some sort of Boeing creation. And Boeing was the one that was creating not just Big Dog and some of these other pack mules, but also creating Atlas, the big scary robot that walks around, the humanoid. And they bought them. It wasn't really a partnership. They bought them. But who knows? It seems like they bought them and now the Marine Corps is using them, so I don't know. But anyway, the robot, born out of a partnership between Google and Pentagon's research arm, turned out to be unsuitable for missions. The Legged Squad Support System, or the LS3, so that's what they're calling this one, has been, quote, put into storage with no future experiments or upgrades planned, unquote. Now, you know, I've talked many times about when you're reading something, you should pay attention, because the second you get that raised eyebrow when you go, huh? That's usually where something is hiding in plain sight. And I'm going to go, huh? To this, they're putting Big Dog, or LS3, I don't know, maybe they're the same, maybe they're not, but they're very similar. It's one of the horse pack mules. It looks like a horse when it trots, except it has no head. And it looks like a big brown barrel with metal pokey legs sticking out of it. But it's still, when it's running, it looks like a horse galloping. But they are literally saying, and this is according to a report by military.com, that because these make too much noise, with a $32 million contract, by the way. Yeah, between DARPA and Boston Dynamics. They're going to mothball the sucker, put it into storage, no future experiments or upgrades at all, $32 million in the closet, toss it in the garbage can. Seems very strange to me. The LS3 was created as a result of a $32 million contract signed in 2010 between DARPA and Boston Dynamics, which is now owned by Google X. Yes, Google X. Good old Google X. And I think a lot of other things going on in Google X, one of the X divisions of the Alphabet agencies, all owned by Google. In 2013, there also was a second contract worth an additional $10 million to develop LS3's field capabilities. So we didn't spend $32 million. We spent $42 million since 2010. They developed them. They liked them. They developed their field capabilities with an additional $10 million. The Marine Corps Warfighting Lab has also had a hand in LS3's creation in the hopes the robot could assist troops to travel with more gear than they could normally carry through rough terrain. So the Marine Corps has been deeply involved as well. However, in the end, Marines using the gas-powered LS3 voiced a very practical complaint with respect to the highly complex robot. It was too noisy. As Marines were using it, there was the challenge of seeing the potential possibility because of the limitations of the robot itself, says Kyle Olson, a spokesman for the Warfighting Lab, as he told Military.com. They took it as it was, a loud robot that's going to give away their position, and I could actually see that. But again, would you take a $42 million investment and chuck it out a window because it was too loud versus trying to find a way to quiet everything down? I mean, sure, it's gas-powered, and it's probably got a little zippy weed-whacker engine in it. Bzz, I know that little cheetah one does. They fire that sucker up, and it's just like a little, it's a little weedy whacker engine. And it runs, but it goes pretty fast, too. I think that Cheeto went up to, like, I don't know if it was 50-some miles an hour. It was pretty damn fast. The littler one. I don't know. These big ones. Big ones can move, but I don't think they could go anywhere near as fast as a cheetah. In addition, the LS3 presented repair problems in the event of a breakdown, and there were questions as to, quote, how to integrate it into a traditional marine patrol. Using funds from the second contract, DARPA and the Warfighting Lab addressed the noise concerns, so they spent $10 million in trying to fix it, developing a smaller electro-powered robot named Spot. And yes, Spot was the smallest, newest one that I saw wandering around at Google. Pretty sure those were Google headquarters that we saw a tour of the one time in a video. And there was the big dog, there was medium dog, and then there was Spot, the third size. And they were all standing right in the lobby. Or maybe it was DARPA. I don't know. There was one interview that we watched, we heard. I watched it. You guys heard it. And when they went in, and you know what, I'm thinking it might be DARPA. When they went inside, here were the three robots standing in the lobby, and then one of them just like gets up and walks away on its own. I was like, oh, this is not a good thing. Autonomous robots. And they can identify you. They come to the door like watchdogs. Anyway, using funds from the second contract, so that's at $10 million, DARPA and the Warfighting Lab addressed the noise concerns, developing a smaller electric-powered robot named Spot. Yet, Spot could only carry about 40 pounds of gear versus the 400 and did not have the same autonomous capabilities as the LS3. They say, I see Spot right now as more of a ground reconnaissance asset, says Captain James Pinheiro, leader of the Warfighting Lab's Ground Combat Element branch head. The problem is Spot, in its current configuration, doesn't have autonomy to do just that. It has the ability to walk in its environments, but it is completely controller-driven. And with both robots on the shelf for now, only a new contract or renewed interest from top Marine officials will resurrect Big Dog, says Military.com. The high point for the LS3 came in July of 2014 when it was part of the Rim of the Pacific U.S. military drills in Hawaii. Google literally bought, you know, I had always wondered this, if they actually bought them or if they just bought the robots. No, according to the story, Google literally bought Boston Dynamics in 2013. So they bought the whole Boston Dynamics is doing development for so many military projects for so long. So Google just used all their money to buy themselves inside the back door of DARPA is what happened. And in doing so, it acquired some of the world's most advanced robots, many of which were built with funding from the Department of Defense. Da, da, da. So there you go. I think I got a sneeze. Oh, don't go away, sneeze. Come back. Come back to me. All right, it's gone. So I don't know, guys. That's one of those things that makes me go, That's a lot of money to be tossing out a window on something that they've been touting for a long time is going to be like, you know, what does it matter if you're coming in to take over or you're doing patrols? What does it matter if you could hear these things, if they had them armed? You know, I have a feeling we're going to start seeing these on the streets in Afghanistan or Iraq at some point. Syria, they'll be marching down Syrian and Yemeni roads to keep the peace. But keep an eye out. The good news is apparently we're not spending any more money on it than we're aware of. But the bad news is, you know, keep an eye on them. Keep your enemies safe. Don't keep your enemies safe. Keep your enemies closer so you can see what they're doing. Once they go underground, who the hell knows? All right, here's another one. Kind of along the lines of robots. This caught my attention. Remind me, you guys, augmented reality will make us smarter. Yes, get your implants. Step right up. This is posted December 26, 2015. In TechCrunch. It says Moore's Law. We've talked about Moore's Law. Moore's Law is computers getting faster and faster and developing at an exponential rate because we're using technology to build the next generation. And each generation gets smarter and smarter. Moore's Law is about to pop up anytime you read an article about the future of technology. Moore's Law is common knowledge in tech. It deals with the exponential growth of the number of transistors on a circuit and the speed that information is processed. And that's the problem. I mean, you can keep going exponentially only to a point, but you reach your mechanical, electrical limitations for how many transistors you can put in a tiny, tiny space. And that's where quantum and all this other stuff comes in. But it deals with the exponential growth of the number of transistors on a circuit and the speed that information is processed. The author of the story argues that there's a new law that is just as important bubbling up to the forefront today, and that is the law of information accessibility. Augmented reality will bring this law right to your doorstep and very, very soon, and it'll be a game changer in the speed at which we get information. Now, remember we read yesterday or the day before about how 2015 has been branded as the year that we started thinking and preparing for the Internet of Things. And there's thousands of devices out there waiting in the wings to be released. The problem right now is that they don't have any across the market standards. But don't worry about that. They get that all worked out eventually. Get some international organization like NIST or some other IEEE body out there, and they'll set a standard and everyone will follow it. Anyone who already owns the products will get free flash upgrades and they'll all be happy. But 2016 is dubbed as the year that we are starting to put the world, every item, object, enchanted objects, smart everything. This is the year it all starts to roll out. Well, along with all that, you know, hey, when everything gets online, you're not going to be able to remember everything. You're going to have so much data coming from every direction. We're going to have some sort of artificial intelligence and, hey, augmented reality to help us keep track of it all. Back to the story. It says, we have all experienced the law of information accessibility for the last 30 years, but probably we didn't realize it. For me, again, the author of the story, it started in preschool at the library with the Dewey Decimal System. But elementary school, we had desktop computers. Well, this person must be pretty young then, because we didn't have computers even when I was in college. We just had a computer lab there. We didn't have them in my high school, but wasn't that I came from some rinky-dink high school. It was still the 1980s. I had one at home, and that was one my dad spent a fortune on to even have, with a 20-megabyte hard drive, 286 clickety-click hamster wheel inside. Anyway, so by elementary school, this kid writing the story had desktop computers with encyclopedias loaded on them. In middle school, laptops came into being, and their mobility meant our ability to obtain information just got quicker. When this author was in high school, the internet and the search engine popped up. That must have been 90s when this kid was in high school. And that's when things got interesting. The information on computers is no longer static and isolated. Accurate information can now be accessed faster than ever before, and it has changed the world. During this author's college years, cell phones became the norm. And today, we have all these smartphones, which have now, of course, made search engines even more accessible. Yes, and the smartphones have pretty much tethered us to the world of dopamine addiction of the internet. I see more and more of this dopamine addiction to things. And it spreads out beyond the internet. It spreads into addictions of other things. You know, when you can't get your fix, you need more and more and more. I think this is turning us, I think it's the internet, literally, with this need for instant gratification, that's turning us into the society of dopamine junkie psychopaths, to be honest. How many people have I met now who come off all nicey-nice and like they're normal, and they tell you they got a serious problem going on? Addicted. Addicted to the internet. You know, when people are addicted to things, they do things that are underhanded. They do things to suck victims into their webs. I'm telling you, this is not a good thing. And we've sucked in an entire society now. Multi-generations have been sucked into this machine, and we have these very ungrateful, narcissistic, instant gratification results that we've created with this technology. And these are the people that are growing up now. So back to the story anyway. That was my take on this. The pattern here is obvious. We are never satisfied with how quickly technology can deliver us relevant information. Oh, because you're a spoiled, narcissistic, centralistic asshole. That's why. Making the next logical step obvious, smartphones very soon will become reality, augmented reality, as head-mounted displays. And yes, this VR stuff, 2016, there's all kinds of projects going on right now, and it's going to be launched here big time into the living rooms of America. Complete immersibility. As Larry Page has already been quoted saying, that the amazing thing about these head-mounted augmented reality displays is that they reduce the time between intention and action. Technology not only wants us to process information more quickly, but it also inputs and accesses relevant information from our technology faster. It's like the previous iteration. We won't know how we ever lived without head-mounted augmented reality displays. They will be more addictive. Look at that. Ding, ding, ding. More essential and fundamentally a part of who we are because they allow us to access information even faster than we do today. Now, when Google Glass first came out, I said, don't put that sucker near your eye. You got a direct connect between the brain and the eyeball. It's called the optic nerve. Google is in bed with DARPA. DARPA has been doing all kinds of brain research. They're like the mad science lab for the Global Brain Project, working on how to fix all the injured soldiers with brain implants like RoboCop. I'm telling you, don't get the shit near your eye. And we know that they've been experimenting with flashes of light and magnetism, electricity, to manipulate and control brainwaves. That's not science fiction. Look it up, ElectRx. Look it up, DARPA and Brain Project. Been going on for a very long time. But now we have this augmented reality 3D VR goggles. And yeah, they've been out for a while. But they're about to launch mainstream. Beyond the video game. To your cable system or whatever you got flowing in your house with the TV. They're going to suck the masses in with concerts and live sporting events. Where you can have a front seat ticket in your living room. And even further blend the differentiation between what is real and what is fantasy. What you can touch and what is just a projection. We've been seeing this more and more. I always forget the name of that game, the shoot, rape, rob, kill, and steal that the kids are all playing. And I know I sound like such an old lady. The kids are all playing this game. But it's Grand Theft Auto. If you ever watch Grand Theft Auto and then go, shit, why do our kids have no respect for anybody and do all these horrible things, self-radicalized over the internet? I think it's not the internet. I think it's these freaking video games because they've already bled together reality and fantasy. They can't tell the difference. Their memories are gone because they've been sucked into the internet, so they don't have to remember anything anymore. They got the attention span of a goldfish. They do what they're told or what they're trained to do, like shooting, raping, pillaging, stealing, and killing. Hey, that's a great thing to teach your kid. And that's what we've been doing. So now let's put them into these 3D goggles. Now, of course, it's great for business. I was just reading the story, and I think we touched on it last week about how this is going to revolutionize like architecture and engineering fields. Because you could have engineers, three different cities or more, 20 different cities, and everybody has their goggles on. They could have a 3D holographic representation of the blueprint of whatever project they're working on. And then all those engineers could be standing in their own respective rooms with 3D goggles on. So they're all virtually standing in the same room looking at this 3D virtual hologram of their blueprint of their project. And they can touch them. We have touchable holograms now, remember? They can talk. It's like full-blown immersive video conferencing, except you're literally sitting in a virtual room together, talking in each other's faces. I mean, if you can't see that there is a definite problem, this is going to be now the next step to what they called in Gibson Neuromancer. That's what it was. It was such a great book. If you never read the Neuromancer, it was like the precursor to the Matrix. But what they did in the Neuromancer was called jacking in. I know it sounds perverted, but it wasn't. It was pretty much like, I think you put on glasses for this one. And it was almost like a Google Glass where bzzz, and you were connected. But, I mean, just like in the Matrix where you'd go into the room and you'd plug in the back of your brainstem into the device that hooked you into the alter world. And this is going to be the next step to that. Put these goggles on. And remember, we've looked at stories already. TED Conference, that was something that SLC Mike sent us. Augmented cognition. They're already talking about the brain implants. And you have crazy countries like China that aren't going to listen to any international suggestions about what's ethical and what's not. China's getting ready here to launch the biggest cloning factory ever in existence on the planet. And they're going to do cows and pigs and humans. If you have enough money, you can get yourself a custom kid. All right, let's go back to this. So anyway, this is this augmented reality head-mounted displays. The year is 2015. Technology not only wants, actually it's 2016. Technology, January 1st, 2016. Technology not only wants us to quickly process information, but it also wants us to input and access relevant information from our technology faster. And just like previous iterations, we won't know how we ever lived without augmented reality head-mounted displays in the future. They will be more addictive, more essential, and fundamentally a part of who we are, because they will allow us to access information even faster than we do today. The shape and form of our devices continues to morph, but what they are doing does not. Each iteration simply allows a little quicker retrieval of information than we wanted. And while it is not the final conclusion of this pattern, it is a massive bridge to our future. Ding, dee, dee, ding. If we take an even longer look back at this law, and this is this law of whatever they called it. I don't know. Scroll way the hell back up here. The law of information accessibility. If we even take a longer look back at this law, it can be seen to have started much further in the past, these guys are saying, a half a billion years ago. In his book, The Blink of an Eye, zoologist Andrew Parker argues that the greatest inflection point of history in the evolution occurred during the Cambrian explosion of one new particular attribute, and that is the eye. The eye was a game changer because now the brain could access external information in real time. And our computers have had brains for decades. So with the rise of computer vision, and we talked about that, computer vision, computer smell, computer taste, they're all coming under the guise of quote-unquote biosensors, of course, to keep you safe or do diagnoses in a quick and easy fashion. And hey, we found out yesterday that Google has applied for a patent on their new drone fleet of medevac drones. Yes, medevac drones that'll be flying ambulances in the sky, able to take blood samples remotely and diagnose what ails you. Yes, that same medevac drone. It says the internet, AR, which... let's go back up and see what it is again. This is augmented reality. Oh, that's what it is. All right. So the internet, augmented reality, and computer vision are all part of the same pattern in that each are massive breakthroughs of increasingly efficient means of the speed at which organisms can summon like enchanted objects, meaningful data about the world. Humans crave omnipotence. And, you know, we've talked about that. We have talked about the lunacy going on right now where the mad scientists are trying to become gods. Omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-knowing, all-seeing, superhumans to be equated with gods. This is the science, the religion of science today. When accurate information can be accessed faster, productivity increases, and this is why we've been striving toward the Holy Grail, to have our devices provide us with perfect contextual data in real time. Augmented reality can give us this, but only when used with high, what do they call them? The high definition AR goggles. For the first time in history, we are about to democratize knowledge. Well, yeah, democratize it in as far as the Google Truth algorithm will allow us to. They're going to begin filtering out things on the internet that they don't believe are true with their cross-checking mechanisms against Wikipedia, right? Anyway, back to the story. This is the last couple sentences. We are about to make the word expert disappear, and for the first time in history, information will be accessed so fast via discrete augmented reality high-definition displays that from an outsider's perspective, your actual knowledge base will become indistinguishable from the prosthetic knowledge you are demonstrating or communicating. So basically what they're saying is, with these new augmented reality goggles and being sucked into the machine, this will be the first time ever, if we're all in that machine, that we won't be able to tell if it's our own brains or if it's the machine that's doing the thinking for us, because every bit of information will be at our fingertips. It's the next step, people. We are being sucked right into the machine. They want it to become indispensable. They want us to forget how to remember. You know, there have been many studies now that we've been losing our memories because everything's on the internet. And hey, if we know it's out there to look it up, then we won't have to remember it anymore. It's like learning trigonometry the old-fashioned way, using formulas. And then these newfangled kids coming out of school today used a scientific calculator to do it all. I did it all by hand. I had to do it by hand on a test, too. You don't remember when you take the shortcuts. It's like somebody helping you cheat. You know, if you make it through school, you say you're a smart kid, but you make it through school because you had all the other smart kids help you cheat. And then you walk around and go, look at how smart I am because I got such good grades when I was growing up. Then it comes out years later that that's how you did your whole life, is you cheated. And you got other people to do the work for you. Guess what? You're never going to be successful because you know what? You never learn to work hard. You never learn to memorize. You never learn the basics. You were given things like a spoiled child. And then you end up again being one of these narcissists who demands everything. Baby Huey crying, demanding, you give me things. You don't know how to take care of yourself. This is learned helplessness. And we are creating learned helplessness to the machine. Why would we do that? We literally, every day that this moves forward, we are literally giving up our autonomy. And we might complain all we want. Once we get sucked in, there's no getting out. Everything is so dependent on it already. But it's your brain, your memory, your motivation, soon to be your healthcare. Everything is going to be sucked into this. You're going to need to interact with any business provider eventually, but soon to be your healthcare provider, by providing biometric information to make you a part of the system. You will not be able to participate in this new world of COP21 green Nazism, all about sustainability. Trying to take care of the planet, you must integrate. I'm running out of time, but I got a couple other stories here, so let's see. Where are we going to go? Well, let's look at this one. Machines that learn like people. This was from about a week ago, December 23rd. Object recognition systems are beginning to get pretty good. And in the case of Facebook's facial recognition algorithm, yes, it's frighteningly good. Oh, surprise. But object recognition systems are typically trained on millions of visual examples, which is a far cry from how humans learn. Show a human two or three pictures of an object, and he or she can usually identify new instances of the object. But 4 years ago, Tommaso Poggio's group at MIT's McGovern Institute for Brain Research. Oh, there's another place. MIT and Brain Research in the same title. Runaway screaming. Began developing a new computational model of a visual representation intended to reflect what the brain actually does. And in a forthcoming issue of the Journal of Theoretical Computer Science, the researchers proved that a machine learning system based on their model could indeed make highly reliable object discriminations on the basis of just a few examples. In both that paper and another that appeared in October in PLOS Computational Biology, they also show that aspects of their model accord well with empirical evidence about how the brain works. If I am given an image of your face from a certain distance, and then the next time I see you from a different distance, the image is quite different, and simple ways to match it don't work, says the Eugene McDermott professor in the Brain Sciences Lab at MIT's Department of Brain and Cognitive Sciences. In order to solve this, you either need a lot of examples, I need to see your face not only in one position, but in all possible positions, or you need an invariant representation of an object. An invariant representation of an object is one that is immune to differences in size, location, rotation, within the lane, and computer vision researchers have proposed several techniques for invariant object representation. You know where this is going to come in handy is when they have facial recognition and flying drones. They want to be able to identify you from a half mile away, a quarter mile away, and then when they're right on top of you to go boop, 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 there's the insurgent, drop the payload. Computer vision researchers have proposed several different techniques for invariant object representation, but Poggio's group had the further challenge of finding an invariant representation that was consistent with all that we know about the brain's machinery. I don't know if I really want to get into all the technicals of this. It's too early and it's New Year's morning. Blah, blah, blah. What's the end result? I don't know. Let's go to the bottom. The researchers' invariance hypotheses is a powerful approach to bridge the large gap between contemporary machine learning with its emphasis on millions of labeled examples and then the primate visual system that in many instances can learn from a single example. The sort of elegant mathematical framework will be necessary if we are to understand the existing natural intelligence systems on the road to building more powerful artificial systems. Well, that was kind of a so I don't know. Machines that learn like people, I guess they're teaching them new ways. RoboCop is coming. All right. Well, where do we go from here? We got about 2 minutes left, 3 minutes maybe, if I talk fast and we find a story to do. I don't know what to do. We looked at some of the disturbing connections between genetically modified mosquitoes, ones they released in Brazil, then this new Zika disease that's just mysteriously appeared in the same regions they released the genetically modified mosquitoes in Brazil. And it's managed to damage over 2,700 children by the mosquito biting the mother and the infection being passed to the fetus, who is then born with birth defects and encephaly. And before 2015, I think it had said there were only like 14 cases. And I was just reading a study that it was actually the very first case in June of 2015 that they had ever seen of this in Brazil. And I'm calling bullshit. I say it's mad science gone mad. I'm saying Oxitec did something somewhere. Because it just seems too convenient to me. And Brazil's a great place to start doing some mad science experimentation on humans. Well, we see now that there's a couple other diseases. There's a flu virus in pigs that can pass to people. They're worried about as a pandemic. And I know we still didn't talk about this, but it was very similar to like the bird flu. Remember the bird swine flu mixture never before seen in nature? Yeah, one of those. If I can, though, and I don't know, my brain doesn't work well in the morning, but the show's almost over. I had this all saved. I was going to do the pterodactyl-sized mosquitoes that already exist in Florida, and they said they blew in on a hurricane. Oh, I don't know if I can do this. There we go. Let's try.
On a downtown stroll, eating lunch outside, or playing golf. This summer, you have a new friend to look out for. The state, considered by many to have the most bugs, is about to get a new tenant, a mosquito 20 times the size of the one you're used to that feeds day and night and has a sting some say feels like a poke from a knife.
Yeah. The little tiny ones that go to the back of your knees, and this one's right in your face. It's aggressive. It's got a nasty bite.
Debbie Castle, a biologist at USF St. Petersburg, says the gallinipper mosquito first showed up after Tropical Storm Debbie. Experts believe the insect will invade Florida during the summer rainy season.
This thing's like a pterodactyl in the mosquito world. It's huge. And
I just had to play that because you know what? They said they were going to release them in Florida. Everyone freaked out. So we just had these mutants blow in on Hurricane Debbie. All right, guys. Well, it's Friday and it's New Year's Day. I hope everyone had an awesome New Year's Eve. You feel all right this morning? Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. We have all kinds of great radio tonight and this weekend. I will catch up with you on Monday. Have